This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
Yeah, it's hard to get around in a 6-foot town.
Welcome in, everybody. Great to be with you this morning. I know I've been gone for a while, but we are starting this new broadcast. This is kind of a test for us, so new show. Gonna have some growing pains. Sorry, it just comes with the business. It's part of the way this works. So we're going to be working with that. There are going to be a few things that we try with the show to try to stave off as many of those growing pains as possible. In fact, what we're working on right now is trying to get a producer for the show, so I'm not running all of this by myself. So we're going to try on that. We will give you some new updates as soon as we can, and there may be some technical issues coming up next week. We're supposed to be updating our servers and updating our Wi-Fi connection, so hopefully all of that will go well. That is the plan. We'll see how it goes. But welcome in. Great to be with you. Great to be back. I know that I have been gone for quite some time, and I am really pleased to finally be back with you today. And the media this morning has been replete with stories of racism, and frankly, this should not come as a surprise to anybody. We're just a few days away from an election, and they can't talk about the economy because, frankly, right now, the economy is doing great. Now, with some news that we just got about automakers taking a bit of a downturn, taking some losses from the steel tariffs and some other industries that are having issues with the trade war that's going on. There are some reports that are saying we've actually undone a lot of the good that we did with the tax cuts. So lots of reason to be concerned. But the point is, right now, the economy is going pretty darn good. And Democrats know that that's a losing issue for them. They know that they really can't do a whole lot with complaining about the way things are running. And so they fall back on their oldest trick in the book. They have to call everybody a racist. And the most recent story of that is really no surprise to anybody. So here's what happened. Donald Trump just put out an ad. He tweeted it out this morning. And I actually can't show you the ad. And this is one of the complaints that I have about the ad, is that it is laced with expletives. There are a lot of things that, a lot of words that are said in there that I can't air on a Christian show. And so part of the reason that this ad is drawing some ire from people is that, and frankly, I think that that's a legitimate criticism. I think that it would not have killed them to just bleep that out. That really would not have been a big deal. But the overall, what's actually contained within the ad, when CNN reported, and foolish me, I should have sensed that they were making a mountain out of a molehill yet again. They were talking about how racist it was. It was in my daily newsletter this morning. And I've got to go. First of all, I want to say this. CNN will very often hide under the veil of people are saying. When they say people are saying, what they really mean is they're saying it, but they don't want to be attributed with the people. They don't want that sentiment really thrust upon them. And so what they'll do is they really want to say, well, you know, we here at CNN think it's pretty racist. They don't actually want to say that. So what they do is people are saying that it's racist. Well, which people? Well, people. And that's really kind of the trick that you run into, is that they will attribute it to, there's talk out there somewhere in this vague open space that people are saying that it's racist. Well, people are also saying the earth is flat. You don't report it as though it's news. And so, not all the time, but typically speaking, when you're looking at any news organization, doesn't just have to be CNN, it could be MSNBC, it could be Fox, doesn't matter. Usually when they hide behind that veil of objectivity, pretending as though they're just impartial observers, they'll say, well, people are saying, what they're really trying to say is we want to say it, but we don't want to seem like we're being one-sided, and so we'll pretend as though we're just getting reports from other people. Now, if you have a specific person that you're about to interview or something like that, totally okay to say, this person is saying this, back up your claim. But that's very different than what CNN is doing, just kind of giving a generalized, well, there are people out there saying it. So that's the first thing. Second of all, I've looked at this ad. The ad never mentions race. Not once. Never brings up race. What it does is it shows video of a guy that is a convicted, proven cop killer talking about how he wants to get out of jail. And because he's an illegal immigrant, he's going to be getting out of jail very soon so that he can kill more cops. I mean, those are the words directly out of his mouth. It's a paraphrase because obviously he uses a lot of salty language that I can't use, but that's the sentiment that is reflected. That's what he's saying. And then it also shows another guy, another illegal immigrant, saying that he wants to get a pardon and seems very confident that he's going to get this pardon. He wants to get a pardon for the felony that he's been convicted of, which in this case, he admits it. This is him saying it, not the reporter or anybody else in the video, is attempted murder. That's the felony he's trying to get pardoned for. And then there's also a video of immigrants in a caravan trying to break down a wall, trying to bust through the border. And so you can understand that the idea behind this is showing that there are bad actors that are illegal immigrants, which, by the way, is a true statement. The idea that all illegal immigrants are somehow just warm and fuzzy magical creatures that never do anything wrong, and they're just families out there trying to build a better life for themselves and others. There are some people in that are illegal immigrants that is absolutely true of. But it is also true that there are a large quantity of people that are coming across the border illegally, and regardless of what your intentions are, crossing the border without proper documentation is a federal crime in the United States of America, even if you're doing it for quote-unquote the right reasons. Either way, you are engaging in criminal activity, and that activity tends to attract criminals that don't mind violating the laws in other ways. Because if you don't care about crossing the border, then there are going to be a lot of people that also don't care about breaking other laws. Laws that would include drug smuggling, theft, even murder, and some of the M13 gang members that go across the border regularly because our border is not very well policed is part of the problem here. Suggesting that there are bad actors in this particular group of people is in no way racist. In the same way that saying certain people of a certain race are bad, you're not criticizing their race, you're criticizing them. And this is really the problem that you have when talking with people on the left. They have this weird assumption that if you are critical of anybody of a different race than you, then the motivation behind that is racism, which makes no sense whatsoever. You can be critical of individuals. You can be critical of illegal immigrants, for example, as a group, and A, not be saying that every single person fits into this particular category that I'm placing them in, and also say that this has nothing to do with race. If the illegal immigrants were coming from Canada, for example, and they were causing all these problems and committing these crimes, even though most of the Canadians are pretty white, I think that you would get the same reaction. And there is a legitimate problem with immigrants from Europe, for example, coming over here and overstaying their visas. And so there's a lot of issues that go with illegal immigration. Being against illegal immigration is in no way racist. Being critical of people for something that has nothing to do with their race is not racist. And here's another thing, too. Illegal immigrants are not all the same race, which I just pointed out. You can be critical of illegal immigration and be just as critical of the illegal immigrants that are here overstaying their visas, whether they're white or Asian or whatever else it may be. It does not necessitate that you are against that particular race of people. And so what we've got to do is we've got to be intellectually honest here and say, just because you have this particular stance on a policy issue, or just because you think that there are a portion, and keep in mind, it doesn't even have to be a large portion, there is a portion of this particular subset of people that are causing problems in our country, A, doesn't mean that you're attributing that to everybody, and B, does not mean that it's because of their race, because the majority of those people happen to be one particular race. And so you got to be really, really cautious about this. But of course, the left does what they typically do, which is just accuse everybody of being a racist when it's really the only arrow they have in their quiver. And unfortunately, it works all too often, and that's the reason that they continue to do it. But the bottom line here is, it is not racist to criticize somebody of another race. Saying that illegal immigration is a problem is in no way racist. And so we've got to be more honest about the ideas here. And speaking of race, since we're on this subject, there was an interesting clip that came out from CNN's Don Lemon. He was being interviewed on Chris Cuomo's show, which I honestly don't remember the scheduling. I think Chris Cuomo comes on directly before Don Lemon, and so they may occasionally do sort of a, okay, here's what's coming up segment together, where they kind of cross-promote across shows. I know that we do that some here at News Radio 1440. You'll remember that I used to have a Rush update during my show, because Rush, of course, came on directly after me on News Radio 1440. So this is not all that uncommon. But what he said specifically in this interview, I think, was really stunning. And I was surprised that even somebody, not that I have a, let's put it this way. Don Lemon outdid himself, even by the incredibly low bar that I already have when it comes to my expectations of Don Lemon. He exceeded even that. And so we're going to go ahead and play that here in just a second. Let's see. Sorry, still running on a new system here. Okay, here we go.
Right to the right, and we have to start doing something about them. There is no travel ban on them. There is no ban on, you know, they had the Muslim ban. There is no white guy ban. So what do we do about that? So and first of all, let me just say this. Maurice Stollard is the name, and Vicky Jones, and they have been lost in all of this. Two people who were killed on Wednesday that you talked about. They have been lost about this, and I know that people feel that this story has not gotten enough coverage, and we will honor them tonight in our program. But go on, Chris. Sorry.
Good. No. I'm going to do it in the closing. You're making the right point. You're covering the right story, and I appreciate it.
All right. Hopefully y'all heard all of that. We were having some technical issues, but anyway, so if you were able to listen in on that, it's so staggering what Don Lemon just said, because in the same sentence that he says, we have to stop demonizing people based on race, by the way, white people are evil. I mean, that's pretty much what he was saying. He's saying white people are the biggest terrorist threat in this country. Does this guy not know what the definition of racism is? Because what he just said was that it's not right to demonize people based on race. By the way, white people have this attribute, and we have to do something about them. Look, if you believe any particular race has a certain set of attributes that are inherent in who they are because of their genetic makeup or their skin color, that is by definition racism. If you're assuming a superiority, which is usually associated with racism, that's exactly what Don Lemon is doing right here, and that, of course, does qualify as racism. If you're saying that this particular trait is a bad thing, and this particular trait is inherent in one specific race, then the statement you are making is racism. And the irony in this whole thing is that Don Lemon makes it very clear by saying this, and he doesn't even realize that he just contradicted himself. Don Lemon is making it very clear that he is not against demonization of people. He is for demonization of other people. And that's what's so ironic in this clip. He goes out of his way to say, let's not demonize people based on race. By the way, people, specifically men, that belong to the white race, they have problems and they're the issue and we need to do something about them. It is just beyond comprehension how he could say this with a straight face and not detect a hint of irony. That just blows my mind that he was able to say that. And so really what you get down to when you boil that statement down, he's not against demonization. He's just for demonizing people of other groups, which is exactly the same thing that you could say, as horrible as they are, about people in the white nationalist movement. People that are the Klan, neo-Nazis, they would say, quit demonizing us white people. By the way, black people are the problem. Well, that is by definition demonization. You are saying that certain people have evil or negative traits based upon their skin color. And to me, what is so staggering about that, what is even more mind-numbingly stupid, because like I said, I've already got a really low opinion of Don Lemon. He already has a really low bar to clear in my book. But Chris Cuomo, apparently not detecting the irony either, just kind of sits there and nods along with it. And I know that Cuomo's not exactly the biggest intellectual powerhouse in the world, but good grief, man. You couldn't detect at least a hint of irony in that and say, well, now hold on a second. I don't know if that's what you really meant to say. I'm not saying he has to attack the guy, but he could at least say, Don, I don't know if you really want to walk away saying that. No, Chris Cuomo just nods along like it's a normal thing to say. And so I guess in his mind, that wasn't demonizing people either. So here's what I did, and this was – I spent probably far too much time on this yesterday. In fact, I considered not doing this at all because it's such a stupid and outlandish claim. There's in my opinion, there's probably so few average Americans that actually would believe that or go along with Don Lemon. So I wondered if this was really worthwhile doing the research. But you know me, I love numbers. I love statistics. I love doing research. And so I thought about it. It's like, even if that happens to be true, and I don't believe that it is, even if it happens to be true, I wonder what the implications are. So what we did was I took some time the other day and did some research into acts of terrorism over the past 30 years and seeing if we break it down by race, what race actually is the number one when it comes to terrorism. Now, keep in mind, when I did this, when I looked into it, I don't see people as masses and groups of people. The left does. They categorize people based on their voting bloc, based on their sexuality, their sexual orientation. They like to put people into groups and treat them as a homogenous mass. Generally speaking, conservatives don't like to do that. We like to think of people as individuals. And so I don't think that any one of these particular areas that we're talking about here is indicative of the race as a whole. So understand that that's where I'm coming from when I say this. But the reason that I'm bringing this up is because what Don Lemon's saying is so obviously false. But even if it were true, it wouldn't make a difference. Because again, I see people as individuals, not as a mass. So I want to go ahead and pull this graphic up if I can. So this is my research from the other day, and I went all the way back to the 1990s, 30 years ago, and these are the numbers that I found. And one thing that you'll notice in the 1990s especially, white men were responsible for a much larger number of attacks than the Arab community. That's not necessarily true when you go into the past 20 years. So just to give you a background on how exactly my methodology and all this, I counted each individual incident, even if in that particular incident, they had the same attacker. So if in this incident, the same guy attacks somebody, goes to sleep, wakes up the next morning, attacks somebody else, I still counted that as multiple incidents. And I also did not count terrorists killing themselves in the death toll. So what I was trying to do with that is I gave them every advantage in essentially asserting that white men were the real problem, because if you're talking about counting each individual incident, the terrorist events where white people were there were actually more prevalent where they would have multiple attacks, because usually if you're talking about people of Arab descent that subscribe to the Muslim theology, usually they wind up killing themselves at the end of the attack, which means you only get one attack. And so even despite that, I counted each individual incident as multiple events, even though that would downplay the significance of the Arab community's attacks. And then also, I didn't count terrorists killing themselves in the death toll. So basically, when crunching these numbers, I gave them every conceivable advantage that there was. And here's what I found. If you're looking down at that and you're looking at the bottom chart there that is 1990 to the present, so that's counting all 30 years, all the terrorist incidents in the past 30 years, at least the ones that I could find according to FBI crime statistics. So I counted each individual event, and on the findings there, you'll see that I adjusted for population. So while it's true that there were 44 attacks between 1990 and today by Arabs and people of that community, and 47% of attacks were perpetrated by people that were white, if you factor that in and the percentage of the attacks, again, you have to go back 30 years to get this, because if you're looking just at the past 20 years, you can see there on the chart that that is not the case. But if you're looking at the past 30 years and understand that that's where you're coming from, there were more terrorist attacks perpetrated by white people than Arab people, because you're looking back at the 1990s. So what you want to do with that is if you adjust that for population, you have to keep in mind that the white population is 76% of the American population. The Arab population is 0.01%. So, in other words, you would think if the terrorist attacks that were committed were indicative of the population as a whole, white people by default would have way more than everybody else because they're over 75% of the population. So what I did was, if you look all the way there on the right to that last chart where it says terrorism per million, so in other words, per million people in the United States, how many terrorist acts did they commit? And by the way, I was being generous on this one too, because keep in mind, in the 1990s, the population was even more skewed, but I'm counting it by today's population. So for terrorism per million, with Arabs, it's 12.22. With white people, it's 0.19. What that means is that if you're looking at it by race, by the numbers, Arabs are 64 times more likely to engage in terrorism than any other race. It is not even close. And if you're also looking at this, you'll find that while, like I said, white men have committed more acts of terrorism since 1990, that's changed in the past 18 years. If you're looking at it from the year 2000 on, then they're committing far less. And that distinction only grows the closer to today that you get. And attacks by Arabs cause 13 times more deaths and 8.1 times more injuries than whites, if you're looking at the death toll and the injury toll there. And so the reason that I'm bringing this up, the reason that I'm talking about this, is just to show how ridiculously wrong Don Lemon is. And this is why you don't make unsubstantiated claims, especially not on live TV. It's just not a smart move. And so this in mind, it's pretty easy to see how Don Lemon was just completely off base in every conceivable way, really. So, moving on, we do have another story today. Kanye West is apparently getting out of politics, to which I kind of thought that the world should give a collective yawn. So, for those of you who have been living under a rock, essentially what happened is Kanye West came out and said some positive things about Donald Trump, and the media lost their mind, because here you have somebody who is a pop culture icon, who is very popular with younger people, with black people, which are some of their key demographics, saying that he likes Donald Trump and that he likes some of the things that he stands for. Now, I said at the onset, when all this stuff was breaking, Kanye West is a legit crazy person. And he does things for attention. That's just who he is. Now, he's incredibly wealthy, so I can't knock him for that. Obviously, he knows what he's doing, at least on that front. And I'm not really a fan of his music. It's not really my thing. You guys know I'm a classic rock guy. I like a little bit of country, but that's about it. And so the issue, though, here is that Kanye kind of sticks his finger into the political wind and sees what would be the most controversial, what's going to get him the most attention, and then he does it. And again, it's made him very rich. It served him very well as an entertainer and somebody that's gotten very popular in the media. So if that's the goal that he's going for, then he certainly has asserted this. And I warned conservatives not to get too up in arms over Kanye. And I actually had this conversation with Andrew Wilkow a while back. It was a brief conversation, but he said the number one issue, in his opinion, with the conservative movement is that we react to things so quickly and we don't necessarily think them through when a celebrity says something that agrees with us, because we're so starved for that. Everybody in the media, everybody in Hollywood is kind of against us, and we're accustomed to that. So when one person actually comes out and says, yes, I like this idea, as somebody that, I like this conservative idea, I like the idea of lower taxes or something like that, then we tend to jump onto them and put them on a pedestal. And this was long before the Kanye West thing happened, and you saw it play out right there, that there were conservatives rushing to make Kanye like the new pop culture hero of conservatism. And I was just sitting there like, guys, Kanye West is nuts. He's not somebody you want to put all your eggs in that basket with. So just recently, Candace Owen, who says some things alike. Sometimes she gets a little bit too off base, in my opinion. Very smart young lady, though. Very well spoken. She is a representative for Turning Point USA, which is an organization that primarily focuses on conservatism on the internet. They do a lot of memes. They do a lot of outreach with younger people with social media. And Candace Owen is an integral part of that. She's a very smart young lady, and she says a lot of things that I really like. There's some things she says that I don't like, but the point is, I consider her more of a mixed bag. But anyway, she made a shirt, apparently, that had a design called the Blexit, and it's supporting this idea that black people ought to exit the Democrat Party. And she essentially used Kanye West's name on it, and Kanye said, well, I don't like being co-opted like this. There's some Democrats that I like. In fact, the night before, I think he campaigned for a mayoral candidate that was a Democrat. And so Kanye is not one of these dyed-in-the-wool conservatives that is going to support somebody with free market, small government principles. That's just not who he is. And people expecting him to be that person isn't. And frankly, from Kanye's perspective, I totally understand why he doesn't necessarily want to be associated with things without people getting permission first. I think that's a legitimate complaint. Because all of a sudden, if somebody just put my name on a shirt, especially akin to and making the appearance as though I endorse a policy that I don't actually endorse, then I can totally understand why Kanye's like, you know what, I'm just going to go back to rapping. Now, in my business, it's a little bit different because by trade, I am a political commentator, so I wouldn't, quote unquote, get out of politics the same way he would. But the difference is politics is not his job. In fact, I've long believed that the reason Kanye was doing this whole thing was to enhance his other job, which is just get a bunch of attention for himself, which, again, that's part of the business. I don't necessarily begrudge him for wanting to do that. But what I did think was foolish was everybody jumping on and saying that they're big Kanye fans and all this other stuff and that Kanye's their guy. Don't do that. Whenever you see that, especially somebody in the media, somebody that's in pop culture, it's okay to support what they're saying. And I'll be honest, I think Kanye did some good while he was in politics. And I was someone that was very skeptical of him when he first came out, as I pointed out just a few seconds ago. And someone brought this to my attention, which I thought was a very good point. I get that you're not a big Kanye fan, he said to me, but how many people that would have never heard a conservative message from somebody like you or Rush or Glenn Beck or Hannity or any of those other guys heard that conservative idea for the first time because Kanye said it and not them? I thought that was a fair point. And I hope that this little venture into politics, as it were, by Kanye did to a degree spur on some thought and spur on some self-reflection from people that otherwise probably just would not have gone for that, probably would not have really thought those things through or ever even questioned sort of the Democrat Party line. I hope that happened because anytime you get people to question things, question their beliefs, and really dig down deep and find out why they believe those things, I think that's a positive thing. Because as Thomas Jefferson said, fix reason firmly in her seat and question with boldness even the very existence of God. For if there be a God, surely he favors honest questioning to blindfolded faith. I think that's correct. Because if we're going to question things, we need to do so in an honest manner, and we need to do so in such a way that we do not fall into the trap of blindfoldedly following something just because it's what we've always believed. I mean, we need to have strong beliefs. You know I believe that. But we also have to know why we believe them. It's not enough to just believe them because we heard it sometime, or that's the way that we've always done it, or somebody that we love and care about and respect said it to us once. We have to know what we believe, and we have to know why we personally believe it. And if there are people out there that question that because of stuff Kanye said, I think that's a win. So, you know, Kanye being out of politics, I don't think it's necessarily a huge deal, but it is interesting. So there is another thing that I wanted to bring to your attention, some really good news. For today, there is a Christian in Pakistan named Asia Bibi, and she just had her death sentence overturned by Pakistan's Supreme Court. Now, the reason this is so significant is because, keep in mind, this is a country that operates under Sharia law. She was sentenced to death for blaspheming Muhammad. They don't have free speech over there. You say something against Muhammad, you are going to be punished by death. That's part of one of the commandments. I don't know if it's the actual... For example, I think that death is one of the possible punishments. I don't think that it is the only punishment. But anyway, that was the original conviction by this woman, Asia Bibi. And the reason that this came about is she was having an argument with some people that were Muslim that refused to drink out of the same water bucket as her because she's a Christian. This is how ridiculous some of the things are over there. But keep in mind, in Pakistan, no freedom of religion, no freedom of speech. And so because of that, if you blaspheme, in other words, if you say anything that contradicts the Prophet Muhammad, you can be punished very severely for this, which is really shown by this. But I do want to talk about this because it's great news that her conviction has been overturned and she will not face the death penalty despite having blasphemed. So good job, Pakistan. I don't say that very often, but good on you for making the right decision, at least on that one. And now we're going to go to a new segment that I am very excited about. I'm going to try to do this every day. We'll see where it goes. And you may notice that from a technical perspective, we're still trying to iron some things out. But this is something that I'm really excited about. This is the daily dose of stupid, because we all have stupid things that happen. We all see what goes on in the media. There is an abundance of stupid. And so here's our segment devoted to giving you your daily dose of a stupid story.
Now you messed it up. You're stupid.
All right, so here's the deal. Ben and Jerry. We all know Ben and Jerry, the ice cream guys. They have just recently come out with a new ice cream flavor. And this ice cream flavor is Pecan Resist. And it has to do with Ben and Jerry are notorious for giving to left-wing causes. It's part of the reason that I don't buy their stuff. But anyway, Ben and Jerry are now putting together this particular flavor to, I guess, fundraise for different left-wing organizations, including Nesta and Color of Change, people that are pro, for example, Color of Change is in everything, really. Everything from abortion to, higher taxes. So really just name your liberal policy and Color of Change is involved in it. They were the people that tried to get rid of a lot of conservative voices in the media, get them thrown off of their platforms, get them fired. They've gone after several conservative voices trying to silence them. And so these are the kind of people that Ben and Jerry have hitched their wagon to. And this flavor in particular, the proceeds go to helping these left-wing causes. So I think really the winning irony in this is that it's Pecan Resist. So it's got pecan and I think also maybe walnuts or no almonds. So it's got two different kinds of nuts in it. And I just thought it was hilarious. It's like, an ice cream that is about the resist movement that has nuts. I guess it's filled with nuts just like the actual resist movement. So this whole thing is stupid. And the reason that I say that is I always chuckle when the left uses capitalism to fight capitalism. That to me is just the ultimate irony, is that they try to use market forces to try to drive their agenda, which means they're trying to destroy capitalism with capitalism. It's like trying to put out a fire with more fire. It doesn't make any sense. So they do this all the time with boycotts, which again, if that's what you want to do, that's fine. That's part of a free market. If you don't want to give your business to people you disagree with, again, that's part of operating in a free market. You do with your money what you want to. But the irony is they are actively fighting the ability to do that using capitalism as their weapon to do it. And that to me is just hilarious. It's kind of like a quote that I picked up a long time ago from C.S. Lewis, where he said that arguing against God makes no sense because you're arguing against the very power that gave you the ability to argue. So you're trying to use logic and reason to argue against God when it is God that gave you the logic and reason in the first place. In fact, if you're looking at the first chapter of John, which we read a little bit earlier on Kevin's show on News Radio 1440 that airs from 6 to 9. I'm on from 7 to 9. One of the verses that we talked about is the Word was with God and the Word was God and the Word was made flesh. And so it gives sort of a background on Jesus and where he came from. What's ironic about that whole thing is the Greek word for word that's used there is logos. And logos could be accurately translated to word in English, but it could also be accurately translated to the word logic. So their word for word actually goes a lot deeper in meaning than our word does. And the idea is that God is the manifestation of love, but he is also the manifestation of logic and reason. And he is the one who spoke order into the chaos. He is the one who created order out of nothing. And so as the order bringer, by arguing against God, you're arguing against the actual embodiment of logic and reason. And it's the same thing here. Ben and Jerry have put together this plan to raise money through the use of capitalism to try to bring down capitalism. And I don't know. The irony is palpable. I really appreciate it. So let's go ahead and we're going to move on to our chaplain's report today. This particular chaplain's report, I think, is very applicable to the story we were talking about the woman who apparently was the verdict from the original court was overturned and she is not going to face the death penalty for blaspheming Muhammad. And so we're going to look in the book of James in chapter 5, verses 10 through 11. And so James writes here, "As an example, brethren, of suffering and patience, take the prophets who spoke in the name of the Lord. We count those blessed who endured. You have heard of the endurance of Job and have seen the outcome of the Lord's dealings, that the Lord is full of compassion and is merciful." So one of the things that James is asserting here, especially in verse 10, is that people who suffer for the name of Christ, those are people we need to be looking to. Those are people that are examples. And it's very often, because it's human nature, that when we see a person, a fellow human, suffering, we want to instinctively get away from them because we don't want to suffer with them. And anything that they were doing that led to that suffering, we tend to try to avoid. It's just human instinct. It's a survival thing. That's who we are. So, for example, if you were to see another person make tea out of poison ivy and you didn't know that it was poison ivy, and then you realized, oh, that killed them, then you wouldn't make tea out of that same plant. And you'd be smart to do so. But sometimes we extend that to spiritual matters. And this is what Paul is saying here. He's saying that person that suffers for Christ, you don't avoid doing what they're doing. You engage in it. You use them as your example, the template that you use going forward. And so this is a really remarkable claim by the Apostle James here. Or James, the brother of Christ, is the one that it's the popular theory who wrote this gospel. And so James, the brother of Christ, we assume is the one who wrote this. He is saying, not only do you not avoid following in their footsteps, but you take active measures to try to follow in their footsteps. And then he uses this great example from the Old Testament. He says, you've heard of the endurance of Job, and look what happened to him. You've seen the outcome of the Lord's dealings. So the argument that he's making is, did Job suffer? Well, yeah, he suffered. But look at how everything ended up. Through Job's suffering, he became closer to God and was more blessed by him in the long run. And that's exactly the promise that we are given through the salvation of Christ, is that, yes, we're going to suffer for Christ's sake. Yes, there are going to be hard times, and there are going to be times where we don't, frankly, want to continue with doing what we're supposed to be doing and continue in our Christian walk. However, when you go through that, when you suffer as Job suffered, when you suffer as these other people that are suffering in the name of Christ suffered, then blessings are going to come because you've seen the result of God's dealings. They may not seem like they're going to benefit you in the short term, but in the long run, God always makes good on his promises. That's really the message that James is conveying here. So thank you so much. Stay the course, friends.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.